in the dark, I play my dream.
Welcome to episode 467 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion. The only Pimpcast on this earth that discusses permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prostitutes. Oh, yeah, it's Thursday, and I'm back here with you. This time I'm flying solo, folks. You know what time it is. William can't be here tonight, and I don't have a guest because, you know, it's cool to have guests on here, especially the ones that we've had lately. Actually, you know, all of them have just been absolutely fantastic, dropping excellent stuff out there. But tonight I'm riding solo. William can't be here. He's up to something else right now. I want to give a hat tip to everybody that's out there. Andy and Nancy, always as all, you know, here as always. Hey, hey, Alabama. That's what I'm talking about. All right, everybody that's in here checking us out, hit that thumbs up. Tell everybody we're live. All right, Sovereign Health Summit, y'all. That's who brought you this show. It's going to be October 27th through the 31st out in Harmony, North Carolina. TPC Tango Papa Charlie will get you 5% off. Be there, be square. You know, hey, if you don't want to be there live, you can do it at home on your couch. Yeah, we got that option too. So go check it out. TPC will get you squared away. Also, EMP Shield, y'all. Been a journeyman electrician for almost, IBEW journeyman electrician for almost 30 years now. It's been a long time. And I'm here to tell you there's not another transient voltage surge suppressor on the market outside of EMP Shield. If anything gets Kentucky Fried downstream, they're going to cover you for 25 G's. Find me another deal out there like that. They got them for your car, your solar setup, you name it. EMP Shield will get you squared away. All right, so it's off and running today. Before, hey, check this out, y'all. I got some good news out there for folks that might be looking for it. I don't get anything for it, but Wellbots has been very, very good to this show, and they've allowed me to test a lot of their equipment. And that's really saying something because I can't even tell y'all how many people, when they find out my former career as an electrician, they're a little reluctant about sending electronics to me. Folks, you have no idea the things that have never, ever seen the light of day. And I had a garage full of them. I mean, some of this stuff was so doggone useless, I had to throw it away, but not Wellbots. Man, I ain't kidding y'all. They got the cream of the crop over there, and they got a deal. And check this out. Elliot over at Wellbots has decided to extend the deal they got, I think, until the end of tonight. So you better hop on it. B-Day Bravo Delta Alpha Yankee, the number 13, B-Day 13, because it's their 13-year anniversary, will knock 13% off that price. And folks, you got to see some of the stuff they got over there right now. I'm talking everything from EcoFlow, Jackery, drones, underwater drones, and some of this stuff is more than 50% off. What, like I said, Wellbots doesn't sell junk, y'all. So I highly endorse the stuff they sell. And I've tested a lot of it. They have never sent me junk. So go over there. Like I said, we don't get anything for it out of the show. It's just, you know what? They're an awesome company. And how many times have I talked about other awesome companies on here without any thought of rewards? So, folks, that's what it is. So Wellbots, I'll probably try and circle back around and cover that later on. All right, so let's jump into the farm news. Check this out, y'all. Michelle went back east. New York is where she's from, upstate New York. And she drove back there to go see our niece graduate. Congratulations, Jalen, by the way. On the way back, every single time, y'all. Okay, check this out. I got a lead foot. Nobody's going to deny that. I almost never get pulled over. And when I do, I would say it's about a 90% of the Now, I hope I'm not jinxing myself here, but 90 to 95% of the time, I would say, I usually get out with a warning. And the reason why, I don't make any excuses, especially if I knew I was, you know, out of order. But I will say that if I make those cops laugh, when I usually do, when they come up there, like the one time is like, hey, why were you going so fast? And I said, honestly, I thought I was going to get away with it. He bust out laughing, came back with a warning. And then I said something similar like that to all the other people out there. I mean, there's no sense in fighting these guys. But anyway, every single time Michelle comes back from New York, when she goes back there to visit family, she gets pulled over in Virginia, not New York, even though New York, Massachusetts, I've never been pulled over there. And I've, you know, they got every other sign on the road is don't do this, don't do that. But Virginia, of all places. So check this out. It's not that she just got pulled over, y'all. You're not even going to believe what I'm going to tell you right now. Maybe actually some of you will. Now, it's not uncommon for me to get a ticket. Whenever I got to go to places like Dallas or Houston or anything like that, I just want to get out of there as quick as I can. So sometimes I accidentally, and I mean accidentally, get on a turnpike. Next thing you know, I'm getting a bill in the mail. Well, check this out. That wasn't the case going here. She got a violation by a modified flock camera saying, dig this, and I wrote it down. It's not a moving violation. It's a civil violation. Yeah, I said it right. Not a moving violation, but a civil violation. And they send this picture of the truck that Michelle was allegedly driving. I don't see her in it. Anyway, she was allegedly driving it. It's like these stoplight cameras that they had in Kansas City. If you ever went in to fight it, they would always drop the case because they knew it was a violation of your Fourth Amendment. Folks, this is what it's come to now. So anyway, it's not a moving violation, not a civil violation. And apparently she blew by a work zone. Okay, where's the cop? This is how we're doing it now? Do you know how many people are probably getting tickets, almost certainly getting tickets this way, and they're just paying the money instead of fighting this thing? I don't care what we got to do. Ain't paying this money. I mean, you could send my mail to the county jail. I know it's $100, but hey, $100 ain't nothing to sneeze at where I come from. And we work hard for $100, and I know all of you do too as well. So we ain't paying it. And if it comes down to, you know, not being able to drive, I mean, Michelle would drive around the whole state of Oklahoma. I'm dead serious. Might just have to find ways around Virginia as well. This is getting ridiculous, y'all. I mean, this is absolutely positively getting ridiculous. So anyway, that's one of those freedom things I wanted to kick out there. If anybody else has had, you know, similar situations, you know, tell me in the chat. So I'll just jump on other things. So water your compost, folks. That's another one I got on the list. It's one of those things to do, especially when you got 5,000 things going on at the same time. Let's say you went and you watched our video, or maybe you watched William's video on how to make compost. Let's say it's really, really awesome biocomplete compost even. You can ruin it all just by letting it dry out. Folks, you don't want to do that. That's exactly why I tell everybody, water your compost. And I try to do it, you know, weekly or, you know, bi-monthly or something like that. So I want to make sure but when you do it, here's one of the ways I do it. I got three different compost piles going right now. One of them is an older, mature compost. The other one is probably biocomplete, and the other one not so much. And when I say not so much, it's just going to need more time. And plus, it doesn't help that I put a dead lamb in there. So, you know, that's got to break down. And every time I put blood in a pile, urine in a pile, any of that stuff, it's always going to be improved. But here's a couple of tricks that you might employ when it comes to your compost pile. Yeah, you can go out there and put water on it. By the way, if you do use water, don't use chlorinated or fluoridated water. Best way in the world to kill all the microbes in there. So don't do that. If you got to use that kind of water, set it out for a while, let it off gas. Hit it with a little bit of fulvic/humic acid. You can buy that stuff in a lot of, not hardware stores. Well, they might have them in hardware stores, but you can find them in a lot of places. Anyway, let it sit with that. It'll wipe all that stuff out. But yeah, don't use chlorinated or fluoridated water, number one. And number two, here's another little trick you can do. Every time I water that stuff, remember I told you I got one pile that is off and running. I can go ahead and take that, fill up a couple of 5-gallon buckets for the other two piles that aren't quite ready yet, and I can make an extract. I've shown you how to do that. We got videos on it. So I'm using a 400 micron bag, stick a handful of compost down in there, squeeze it through the bag, let all that stuff be in an aqueous, take all those microorganisms, and I can put them in an aqueous form, meaning that it's suspended in water. And then when I use that water over my, you know, compost that isn't quite ready yet, guess what? It's just a matter of time. It's going to be squared away. So that's one trick. And then if you don't have any that's already squared away, use soil saviors. Good night. Absolutely, positively use soil saviors. So there's a couple of hacks you can do instead of just using regular water, which you can do. You can go ahead and fortify it even more by using those methods. So absolutely, positively. All right, here's some other farm news. It may not seem like a big deal to a lot of y'all, but see this water bottle I'm holding? Now, for those that can't see it, it's glass. Every time you typically see me drinking water, it's out of a stainless steel jug. I know other people are going to say, no, duh. But I'm here to tell you, y'all, here's how we process the water we drink. Get it from the well. Now, that well could very well be compromised ever since that hurricane. That's a whole nother podcast altogether. Anyway, take that water and I distill it. When it's done distilling, I structure it. When I'm done structuring it, I hit it with minerals. And then I magnetize it on the Magnetico sleeping pad that I got under our bed. So do all that stuff. And then I was turning around, filling up my stainless steel jug, which, you know, seems all right. But taste that water in the stainless steel. And then I took the same water and put it in glass, which Michelle has been doing forever and a day. She's been telling me about it. And finally decided to take her advice. And I'm like, okay, this tastes 180 degrees different. This doesn't even taste like the same water. It tastes perfect. Absolutely perfect. So that's what I've switched over to right now. I'm not saying that I won't. There may be times where it just makes sense to go ahead and bring that, but every possible chance I can. I got a Mountain Valley spring water, which, by the way, if you ever got to buy some, it's probably some of the best stuff out there. And then, of course, I drink Grolsteiner, which I was drinking. By the way, y'all, don't do a podcast with a live guest while drinking carbonated Grolsteiner, which I did last night. Bad idea, because I'm having to burp. You know, good thing I got this cough button here, man, because y'all, it would have been a weird podcast. I was sounding like Booger out of Revenge of the Nerds a couple of times there with some of these burps that were coming out of me. But I thank God I got a button where I can mute a lot of that stuff. So there's a lesson right there. But anyway, I'm drinking out of glass and you might want to consider it. All right, here's some other things I got going on. I can't believe I haven't mentioned this before. Okay, I got these potatoes out back. I know a lot of people have already gotten their potatoes. Remember, we're at 3,000 feet. Remember, for every 1,000 feet you go up in elevation, you essentially gain a zone north, or a latitude north, rather. Anyway, that's something to consider when you're growing in the kind of environments we are. Well, anyway, my potatoes are ready. They've probably been ready for a couple of weeks. So I'm about to pull them out, but here's what I want to really communicate right now. Remember that clandestine garden idea that I talked about a while ago? If you don't know about it, go back and watch that video where I'm growing the microgreens in there with the carrots. I'm growing the microgreens in there with the potatoes. Well, when the microgreens kind of went back a little bit, Michelle had a bunch of leftover basil. She started them from seeds, and she filled up all the space down there she possibly could. Why? Because, folks, I could eat my weight in the pesto that she makes. Folks, anybody that tries it feels like it is earth-changing. World-changing, universe-changing if you're me. And you got to have the fresh basil, and it's only going to be more therapeutic if you grew it where you are. So we got tons and tons and tons of basil out there, so much so that I've even freeze-dried a lot of it for the winter. All right, so let me get back to the potatoes. Once some of those, the cover crop went back, you know, I chopped and dropped a lot of it. Adam's Family Values, I'll get to that in a second. Yeah. And thank you for putting it in capital letters, by the way. Here's what I did. When I cut that stuff back, I took those starts that Michelle had of basil and I stuck them in the rows in between all of the garlic out there. Folks, I got basil coming out of my eyeballs out there. But this is exactly what I'm talking about, folks. I don't know why anybody else hasn't done this before, where you're growing the interstitial spots with things that are not going to interfere with the things you got growing in the other place. Why can't you do this? Like Eric Sider was talking about, Eric saw what I did. He did it in his worm bin. Everybody needs to check out that video. And then Eric's also saying, why couldn't you do this nonstop? Because the microgreens, number one, even in an, I know I talk about this all the time, but we got new people, so I'm going to talk about this. Even if you're growing microgreens in that neutral medium, they're still powerful in terms of what they bring to the table. But imagine how powerful they are when you're using them in between the rows of everything you grow out there. So instead of buying salad in the store, buy a crap load of microgreen seeds, which is probably a couple of visits buying salad at the store. You're getting stuff that is, I mean, nutrient rich on a level that I can't even begin to describe. So anyway, do that. But back to the basil. Sorry, I keep getting sidetracked. So I put the basil out there. Didn't really know for sure what would happen, but folks, it's time to take it all up right now. So in this harvest of potatoes, and I'm hopefully going to shoot that video, ain't going to be tomorrow because we're going to go, yeah, we got some things that we got to do around here. But I'm thinking on Sunday, I'll probably get that video done talking about the harvest that we're going to do where we're getting the potatoes out of the ground and the basil at the same time. Okay, at the same time, why couldn't I have done dill out there? I actually did in other beds. I could have done dill. What grows better with potatoes than dill? I mean, pull that up, make so much, you know, get so much of it. One is not interfering with the other. I could have put a ton of dill out there. I did a handful of it because I grew it from seed and it was more of an experiment, but I wish now that I'd done more because I got dill out there. I got basil out there. And there's so many different ways you can go about it, folks. But look, to my knowledge, I haven't seen anybody doing this type of stuff. I'm sure somebody has. I'm not the first to come up with it. I just haven't ever seen any videos on anybody doing this. And why can't you? So you could be sitting here growing microgreens all through the growing season, not just in the cold months, and not using up electricity in your house, which, by the way, if they're outside, they're getting a full spectrum of sunlight. That means everything. I know you can grow microgreens on a grow light in your bedroom, but why? Why do that? I can see where some people might be tempted to do it in the winter. Okay, but it ain't winter. Why not do it outside? Grow that stuff. Go out there with a pair of scissors. Go look at what microgreens cost and look what the seeds are, you know, what they cost you. You can be growing this stuff and saving yourself a pile of money and getting yourself all kinds of nutrition out there. So don't want to beat that dead horse anymore. But yeah, that is a good, good method that I've come up with, and it's working like nobody's business. Okay, thoughts on uranium glass. You know, I know Matt from Cultivate Elevate. He's a buddy of mine. And in fact, I sent him some honey and some bee pollen out there for him to take it for a test drive. He's a big believer of it. And honestly, I had on Hakeem from Above Phone, and when we were off air, he was showing me his version of it. They were selling this stuff all over the place years and years ago. I don't know, maybe 80 to 100 years ago, everybody had these things. I haven't personally looked into them to any kind of great detail, but Matt's information is usually spot on in so many different ways. I would definitely love to examine it. I'm going to need a little more confirmation. I'm going to have to go look at it, into it for myself. But really, I haven't done anything in that regard. So, yeah, let me know if you know anything, because I would like to know. Homestead twins in the house. Man, think about you guys every single time we go to the farmer's market and Michelle has that bag that you made for her. I meant to tell you guys that weeks ago. That is by far, I mean, women carry purses. She's carrying the bag you guys made. That is the coolest. I mean, that thing is the best flipping bag ever. I know she's wishing she was in here right now. Yeah, that is some good stuff right there. No diarrhea salad. Okay. Yeah, I definitely wouldn't want to eat that. don't know what Mountainside with Ken and Amy are talking about there, but yeah, apparently diarrhea salad is on some people's menu. It ain't on mine. I'm not quite sure what they're talking about, but maybe they'll tighten it up there. All right. So got all the blueberries down there. Okay, cool. So our blueberries down in the food forest and then the orchard, probably 3 and 4 years old. Man, they have produced abundantly this year. I mean, absolutely abundantly. And I'll tell you another thing. I know a lot of people complain about, you know, birds and stuff getting their blueberries. Well, we've used a lot of our blueberries as something of an understory, which isn't really recommended in most places. Blueberries typically light open sun, and it was a complete accident. So all the blueberries that were like treated as more of an understory and were covered by, let's say, a nitrogen fixer, they did great. All the other ones that were in the open, they still did great. But I think there's so much out there in this food forest that the birds that would ordinarily mess with them, you know, we save a little bit back, 10% for nature. But yeah, we We absolutely had a great blueberry harvest, but I don't think it's enough. So we're probably going to have to go out there to our blueberry farm lady out there, Janet at Cloud Nine Farms. And she's absolutely fantastic. Maybe pick up some other things that she may have out there. But yeah, Janet, we'll go out there, you know, at some point in time, go pick some blueberries and that'll fill up. That's the cool thing, y'all. When you know a lot of other farmers out there, maybe you didn't get enough of a particular thing. Well, we're still eating the blueberries that we got from her last year, so I don't know that we have to, but man, it's just a wonderful, wonderful time. Also got all the peaches out there. We had a little bit of a problem on some of these peaches that have never produced before. Let me tell you what I did. Well, let me tell you what I didn't do. So we had a fair amount of coddling moth problem down there. Remember, it's not the tree. It's not the genetics. It's your soil. So I have been a little bit lax in these areas by the driveway. So all the ones that had, you know, marginal soil out there, guess what? I got fruit that got screwed with. Now, I could have done a whole lot with some of the fungal issues that were out there if I would have gotten ahead of things and took some of that raw milk. I've just been so darn busy, I didn't do it. If I took raw milk like I did on that peach tree that gave me 400 pounds last year and I mixed it, take the cream off. You want to make ice cream out of that, okay? You don't want to put it through your pump sprayer, but take that raw milk, mix it 50-50 with purified water. Remember, no junk in it. Distilled water for the most part. Mix that 50-50, put it in your pump sprayer, and go out there and spray everything. Spray all the leaves, spray all the fruit as it's coming up. You want to do it on a full sun day, okay? You don't want that stuff sitting there, so you want to make sure it's really sunny. Spray every side of that leaf, spray everything you can, and all your fungal issues, bacterial issues even, will go away. That's a trick I learned from my man, Stefan Subkowiak, you know, Mr. Permaculture Orchard himself. So that's one of the cool things that I've gotten from him. Had I done that, I would have had a much, much better, maybe a bumper crop, honestly. But I didn't do it. And we got some peaches off these trees, just not as many as I would have preferred. So I was, you know, that's one of those areas where I kicked myself. Now, I'll get to the point ultimately where I build the soil up around there that my tree has everything it needs. So how will I do that? Put down a new mulch ring. I'll put down I'll put down my compost, put down the cardboard, and cover it up with about a foot of mulch. Okay. And if your soil's alive, it won't be there forever. So you got to do that a couple of times. But like I said, we've been going at 100 miles an hour. So that's one thing. That's another little trick we can drop right in here. All right, and so finally, a little bit off the beaten path, I try to finish up my little segment here with something that might be, I don't know, something you might want to be concerned about, and you should. I know a lot of people aren't talking about it, but the geopolitical stuff over there, particularly in the Middle East, is blowing up again in a big, big, big way, in a much bigger way. I mean, good night. We have musings from the administration talking about using tactical nukes over there. Are you kidding me? Imagine the Pandora's box that's going to open. So folks, I'm not saying this to be freaking you out. I'm just telling you because a lot of you may not know it. And also, you know, if you want to keep up on it, here's what I've done. Here's a little hack I do where I can stay informed, but not be consumed by it. So I'm really careful about what I'm putting in my head these days. And the Bible talks an awful lot about that sort of thing. So I'm trying to be as cautious and careful as I can, but I do this show. And also, you know what? If I'm going to be a sheepdog, I want to know what my flock may be up against. So I gotta have one foot in there, but I don't stay consumed by it. Certainly not. If I'm not really, really careful, I can be. So I make sure I titrate the amount of bad information I get. And I've talked about it before. That one of the best ways in doing that is that for every, let's say, 1 hour podcast, which I'm listening to it on double speed, try to overlay that with the audio Bible, or like I've done where I've taken the audio Bible and I overlaid it. I had to do it myself. I still want to find a way to do this and be able to get it out to other people where I've overlaid it with Selfeggio tones. It is one of the most soothing things, folks. You have anxiety issues. You have any kind of issues out there. That's one of the things I do. And I did it actually today. I'm starting to feel my temperature rise a little bit. And I said, okay, let me lay on this pulse electric magnetic field mat and go ahead and lay. I would lay out in the grass, but Michelle just, you know, cut it out front with a weed eater. So I didn't want to be covered in grass. So I laid up on this mat and It's where I do some of my memorization sometimes, but also it's where I got the audio Bible overlaid with Selfeggio tones. And I wish I could tell you the name of the website, Whole Tones, W-H-O-L-E. Whole Tones is where you can find this stuff done in the kind of frequencies like 432. It's a bunch of different frequencies they use, but they're all within the Selfeggio frequencies. So I've overlaid that with the audio Bible read by Max McLean. And that's what I do to kind of, I mean, I guess, well, I sure hope I ain't King Saul, but honestly, it has that same effect on me, I suppose, that, you know, King David had when he was playing for Saul. But anyway, that's a little hack you can do out there. One of the little things I got to do is figure out how to do all of the Old Testament that way. Not the Old Testament, but the Book of Psalm. That's where I have it going right now. Anyway, if you want to use one of the hacks I do, I go to X, okay? And I only check out really three people when it comes to geopolitical stuff. And that's Matt Bracken, former Navy SEAL, Michael Yon, former Green Beret, and then, of course, Colonel Douglas McGregor. If you just check out three of those guys and just look at their daily posts, you'll get a real feel for the bottom as to what's happening. So anyway, I couldn't recommend that enough. And that's about where I leave it. I listen to a podcast, and if they start talking about things that I already know, I zip past it. I go to the things that are relevant to me. So that's exactly how I'm trying to maintain my sanity in this world. All right. So let me tell you what's going on this weekend. KSL, Kentucky Sustainable Living. They got their festival this weekend. That's going to be in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And anybody there, William's going to be teaching there. So you might want to go check that out. My man, Darren from Hacks for the Homestead, he's going to be there. Going to be a lot of other people there, folks. I know for some weird reason, a lot of people are not going to these homestead festivals when you really ought to be. I don't understand why anybody wouldn't be going to these if you're in any kind of close proximity. Number one, you'll go there and find out that you got a mutual assistance group that is in close proximity to you. And you're going to find out that it just feels good being in a room with other people you can relate to, you know, because a lot of other people out there think people like us are weirdos. So anyway, that's going to be this weekend, and it's going to be an air-conditioned venue, so you might even check it out for that. All right. Also, the following weekend, July 24th through the 26th, Mountain Readiness is going to be in Swan Lake, Montana. I'd go up there for no other reason. If I could get away, y'all, believe me, I'd be on the first thing smoking out there. I haven't seen that country. Man, I want to see it so bad, and you're going to be close to the Glacier National Park, all these other things up there that I really want to go check out. Man, I wish I could be there, but anyway, if you can, it's going to be at Swan Lake, Montana. Go check out Mountain Readiness. Also, EMF Rocks. I got one of those bags right here on the grounding pad that my feet are on right now. If I'm going to be in here around all this EMF, y'all, I'm G'd up from the feet up. You know what time I'm talking about. EMF Rocks, 10% off with that. And then Redemption Shield, where I get my grounding mats and stuff like that, you get 10% off with promo code PERMA on both of those. And like I said, I use them together. I got that mat going out this window, which y'all can't see. It's going out this window, out to its independent ground, which you do not plug them into the wall, folks. Yeah, let me just cover that real quick. I'll cover a couple of questions. Do not plug your grounding mats into the wall. Let me say that one more time. Do not plug them into the wall. You have a whole lot of dirty electricity out there, y'all, and you are being part of it. I don't care how well you think you attenuate it. It ain't good enough. You need your independent ground going out a window, through the floor. I don't care how you get out there. Put those things, get them off. There is too much dirty electricity on these power lines. And with all these, you could use a capacitor bank and clean all these up. But the powers that shouldn't be don't care about you. So you don't need to know what a capacitor bank is. There are ways to clean it up, but it's a zero-sum game. Because as you clean up the dirty power, you increase the RF through that device. Yeah. Won't go through all that. I will say, though, best thing you can do with a grounding mat, make sure it's independently grounded, and they sell those rods where you can stuff them like a one-foot rod. You can get it into the ground. Or if you're clever, you know, you can find some place that's, you know, put it on an eight-foot grounding rod if you have to. That's going to be the best anyway. So go check them out. Soil Saviors, finally, for the people that want to know about that, we got that in the link down below, or you can go to the website at Permapastures Farm. All right, so let's go to the good news here. All right, so check this one out. They just found, now you're going to be thinking, why is he even covering this? They got a mysterious new monkey species, dig this, with orange lips and a pig-like snort found in the Congo rainforest. Maybe they'd have found it a little bit sooner had we not been starting wars in the Congo since JFK got assassinated. Trust me, y'all want to hear the history on that one. Boy, I could blow your minds on what happened there. Yeah, Lumumba, the whole nine yards and what our government did over there. Anyway, Congo has been a mess, even though they are probably, they got the biggest, they got more minerals and everything else over there. And we intentionally, and the other powers that shouldn't be, intentionally keep them in lifelong civil war, even though it could be one incredible place. In fact, about a year or two ago, I was tapped by this aid agency, wanted me to start Chicken Tractor on steroids over there in the Congo. And they were talking about guaranteeing my safety. I'm like, nah, you ain't guaranteeing nobody's safety over there right now. Anyway, I was reaching out to some of my special forces buddies to see if we could, you know, work something out. Just didn't make sense. And honestly, I didn't feel the Lord calling me to do it. So every time I don't obey, I got problems. And I certainly don't want my head removed because I didn't obey. Back to this monkey. And I ain't talking about Michelle Obama. Yeah, I actually said it. I think everybody's actually seen that meme out there where she's got her teeth showing and the whole lot. I swear she looks like the monkey in this video. I'm dead serious. That was the first thing that popped into my head. And anyway, mysterious new monkey. So it's there in the Congo and they just found this species. Folks, the reason I'm saying this is good news is how many undiscovered things are right around the bend. I could swear, man, I don't know if I discovered it, but I know, I remember when I was in Kuwait, I was laying in the sand and there was this little reptile on all four legs. Weirdest thing I ever seen in my life. And back then there were no camera phones and stuff like that. He stood on all four legs. And I remember being in a prone position out there. I'm in there with this guy named Gino and we're taking off our Kevlar hats. I mean, you're doing anything to try to pass the time. I mean, you're sweating like a runaway slave out there in the sun. No cover, no nothing. And we're covering this thing up with sand and it would be on top of the sand every time we'd cover it up. Started with a handful, then we're taking our Kevlars, just dumping it on this little creature. And I was like, man, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen in my life. We tried to capture it, but it wasn't happening. Me and Gino both thought, man, did we just discover something here? And how many other things? I mean, we're talking about going to space, man. We don't even know what's in the oceans. And here it is right here in the Congo. They discover a Michelle Obama type monkey. I don't know what else to call this thing. They discover this thing and here it is. It's on the radar. This giant animal that looks like I can't remember what it was. It wasn't, you know, long ago that they discovered that over in Africa. How many other things out there? I mean, yeah, I'm gonna go a little on the wild side here. You know, Bigfoot, you know, what is that? So many people have seen it. People that I don't believe are lying about it. Now, what did they see? Did they see some cryptid from the, you know, is it some Nephilim creature? I don't know. Is it some ape out there, some skunk ape? I don't know. All I know is that when you find things like this, I wonder how many children out there are reinvigorated to think, you know what, man, there are still things on this earth to be found, things to be discovered. I mean, you know, right now, folks, I'm dead serious. I'm going to go on a little bit of a tangent here, as I'm known to do. The Steamboat Arabia. I remember when I was in college, I was finishing up college when I was in Kansas City. And I didn't live in Kansas City. We lived on the outskirts of it. Anyway, there's a place called the Steamboat Arabia Museum. There was a family over there called the Hawley family that back in the 80s, they went down there and they found one of the steamboats that was alongside the Missouri River. Now, that river has changed over the years, took different courses. And they pulled up a steamboat called the Steamboat Arabia, I think. And then, of course, the moment they picked it up, the state wanted to go in there like a Snoop Dogg song and take half their proceeds. So they said, okay, forget about all that. We'll just make a museum. So it's a privately funded and owned museum. If you're ever in Kansas City, you really ought to check it out in the River Arts District. Anyway, I remember when I was going through a course in college. It was like History of Kansas City Museums or something like that. I thought it was going to be a blow-off elective. But since I'm in the history, I thought, okay, I'll check this out. One of the best courses I ever took in college. And anyway, I remember Greg Hawley. He's since passed on right now. He's one of the Hawley people or the Hawley family that actually brought this thing up. He's doing the class. And I made sure I positioned myself to be the last person leaving because I wanted to ask him something. I went up to him and I said, Greg, man, I just saw a book over there in your library. where you have GPS coordinates of every single ship alongside that river. Yeah, I know Uncle Sam wants to take 50% of it, but you said there's still ships down there worth over $1 billion. And folks, that was years ago. I mean, it must have been 20 years. I don't know how long, but it was a long ago when I had this conversation. And it was $1 billion then. They have ships filled with pre-Civil War armaments. I mean, absolute history right there. I said, how come you have never been back? He paused for a moment, got a little bit closer, almost uncomfortably, looked me dead in my eyes, and he said, I got a question for you. How come you haven't been after it? Folks, I'm not going to lie. That has troubled me from that day until this day. Every single time I come across a story like this, I'm sorry to get a little bit emotional or choked up, but I made a lot of mistakes in my life. And I've since I've gotten past those things, those problems, those issues, those things laid on to me as a kid, I said, I will never, and there's a quote from one of my favorite Louis L'Amour books in there, Kerboucher, the Corsair, I will call him. He says a quote in there that I've never forgotten. He says, I will owe no debt to my destiny. That's one of those debts, y'all, that I still have yet to pay. It's one of those things. I mean, I know people right now in this audience that if I said, hey, y'all, let's go after this ship. And you know what? We'll take a fair piece of it. We'll put it in a museum. We'll take another fair piece. We'll keep it. And then we'll sell some stuff off to pay for the expedition and maybe put a little money in our pockets. That thing was worth $1 billion then. What do you think it's worth now? And it's not like the Atocha in the Atlantic. We know exactly where all these ships are. And to my knowledge, nobody's ever been back. Yeah, Uncle Sam's going to steal 50% of it, but I might be able to make do on half a billion dollars and all the people that work with me. So anyway, me as a 55-year-old man, and I'm sitting here thinking, man, I'd love to go after one of these things. Maybe I need to find a way to get this done and maybe get a gang of people out there to get it done, because the Holly family did it back in the 80s with very few resources. And I'm wondering, man, what would it be like? Go over there, make a deal with one of these farmers where it's in a farm field now, and go, you know, pick one of these up. I mean, treasure hunting. Is that any different than this story that I'm talking about here? I don't think it is. And I think it is a whole lot of people in the sound of my voice right now that somewhere along the way, I think so many of us have just, we forgot that wonder that we, that childlike wonder that we had as a kid. Now, I have rediscovered it in many ways, farming. But there are those other Indiana Jones moments that all of us, I think so many of us, wish that we had. And this is one of those for me. So maybe if this earth keeps, you know, moving and doing, well, I think it's stationary. But anyway, if the things keep going the way they are, I think maybe I might just say, forget it and go out to Missouri or Kansas, wherever these things are located right now, and go dig up one of those ships. Anyway, holler if you hear me in the chat. Anyway, yeah, another one here. Let's see here. U.S. troops. I spent maybe a little too much time on that, but I think there's a whole lot of people are giving me a virtual amen, because I think so many of us have just lost that childlike wonder. Anyway, here's another good news story. U.S. troops to leave Iraq by the end of September, ending in 23-year deployment. Okay, on the face of it, that seems like really good news, right? Or are they going to be repositioned to go over to Iran? Don't put it past them, y'all. But right now, I'm going to chalk that up as good news, but I think that's just a rope-a-dope. And then finally, this last one here, ancient kitchen remedy proven to neutralize deadly pathogens. I guess I better be careful about that talking about. Okay, in a nutshell, what they're doing is basically saying, you got ginger, great for everything. You got garlic, great for everything. Y'all, I eat probably four massive cloves of garlic every single day. I do it for a whole variety of reasons. In fact, I just got finished eating brisket before I came in here to this studio. I had brisket and potatoes, and I crushed up 15 minutes prior, I crushed up some garlic, put it through the garlic press, and I'll just mix it into whatever I'm eating, and it's just a fact of business. But anyway, they're talking about in this article that if you can combine the two, good night. Heavens to Murgatroyd, you got yourself something there. So that's good news as well. All right, so let me just cover some of these questions right quick. How do you keep Japanese beetles from eating your peaches? Using the very same thing I talked about. You have, like when I had Jack Spearco on the other day, he was talking about the bricks reading in his garden. The higher the sugar content or the Brix reading in what you're growing out there, it will basically make your garden impervious to pests. Remember, you don't have a Japanese beetle problem. You got a lack of good soil problem. That's what you got there. I don't have a coddling moth problem. I got a lack of good soil problem. That's exactly where it is. Now, it doesn't hurt when you have coddling moth traps out there like Stefan Subkowiak has. Really easy to make. Go check out his permaculture orchard video. Go check out any video the man's ever made. And he talks about how he goes about doing that. Remember, it's you got to reposition the way you think about it in permaculture. You don't have a beetle problem. You got a lack of vitality in your soil. That's really what your number one problem is. Oh, Ken and Amy. Okay, salad issue. The outbreak of diarrhea from the parasites is surging. Yeah, folks, if you knew how your food got to you, I mean, good night. If you knew that most of that salad came up out of Mexico or California, which may not even be in your zip code, you wouldn't buy it. Or maybe you would. Or if you know that they're out there defecating in the fields where they're picking, if you knew about that stuff, you might think twice about it. So yeah, be careful about that. I'm glad you pointed that out. Hey everyone, hit that like button. Thank you so much, Nancy. Let's see if we got any folks. If I'm missing you, it's because you didn't put it in capital letters. That's the only way I can read it with these birth control glasses. So yeah, Christy saying raw. Yeah, that's how I eat that garlic. I eat it raw. Or one thing you could do also is you can crush it up. I love the taste of garlic. It doesn't really bother me. Man, I just crush it up. And if it's a problem for you, I just stick it in my mouth. You can do it, you know, crush up some ginger as well. Just swallow it all. Man, I eat for performance these days. That's how a player rolls. All right, so we got no more questions here. I'm going to go to my man, Eric Sider, and take a drink of this water in a bottle.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip is the system worth saving. My friend and colleague Matthew Trum was recently hit with some terrible news regarding the school food forest he set up over 10 years ago. The maintenance department put in a request to redo the lawn that has become a muddy mess because they screwed it up the first time around, which has triggered an audit by the State Board of Architects. They want to rip out the whole food forest because it is in violation of their idiotic regulations. As far as I can tell, the State Board of Architects' main purpose is determining the most unlikely chance of harm or liability and using that to base their regulations on. It is certainly nothing that is best for people or the ecosystem. So here is the dilemma. Do we try and work within the system, potentially creating an approved school food forest design for all of California? Or say, go F yourself and start a war of public opinion? Both require significant time and energy, distracting from getting on with the work that needs to be done. Now, I almost always lean towards asking for forgiveness rather than permission, but Bill Mollison also said, the more regulations you have, the better the design. My main reason for considering working within the system is, unfortunately, that's where most of the financial capital is. And we must create paid livelihoods out of all this work of regenerating the ecosystem, or it just is not going to happen. Relying on volunteers is not only unrealistic, but it doesn't pass an energy audit anyway. I don't know what the answer is. Maybe all of the above. But another quote from Bill about creating an alternative system is that you must get the second hamster wheel up and running before you jump across. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider. Your need of permaculture t-shirts, the official pimp gear of this PimpCast, or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com. And for more information on my permaculture community group in the Sacramento area, head over to permaculturefairoaks.org.
That's my dog right there. I mean, yeah, it's an easy dilemma for me to be in the, you know, my little seat over here to say what I would do. I would tend to want to fight. I mean, that's exactly the way I'd roll with it. Or like Eric said, or you can work within the nasty confines. I mean, I would rather anything I can do to put a nasty view on government these days, man, I'm going to do it, especially if I can do it through this platform or like that old boy that was up in Virginia, as a matter of fact, where they were going to come in there and take his pigs. There was such a stink raised about that where all of us were going to descend on the county seat. I can't remember the county building. Yeah, it was up there in Virginia. All of us were threatening to go up there, and they said, okay, yeah, case dismissed. And it was going to be a gang of us up there. So, if there's anything I can do, if y'all decide to fight it, let me know. We'll see if we can mobilize some people all throughout this country to help in any way they can. Man, I hate the government, y'all. I hate it with a passion. Founding fathers are rolling over in their graves right now. All right, so got one here seeking to find. Yeah, he says, count me in for the ship hunt. I've been a listener for years, so if you're going to go for it, I'll get it done. It'll get done, yeah. Wow, what a suitable name for, potential treasure hunt. Like I said, y'all, I will owe no debt to my destiny. Even if I just got to find some financial backers that would be willing to do this. I don't know that I could fund it myself. But if for no other reason, man, you talk about an adventure. I think that would be an absolute adventure. So anyway, we'll maybe revisit that also. Donna, Ray, boy, you always got some good stuff here. Talking about the bones of the fallen giants. I don't know what conversation I missed here. And they created a dinosaur narrative to create the fossil fuel shortage. I've talked about this before. If you go listen to Colonel Fletcher Prouty, one of the sharpest guys out there in history. He's passed on now. He was a guy that Mr. X in the movie JFK was modeled behind. Wicked smart guy. And he was in the know of so many things. You ought to hear, if you get a chance, go to his YouTube video about fossil fuel and what it is really and how the whole narrative is garbage from start to finish. Oil is abiotic. It didn't come from any fossils. And it's been well known for a long time. In fact, the Nazis knew it. And they were, they tried to make it known to the rest of the world, but everybody else, this is how they keep us on the, this is how they keep us on the chain. All right, before I go hot and popping on this, WellBots, remember y'all, if you got in late, WellBots has got a deal and a half. Go to the website. They got the Jackery. They got the EcoFlow. They even got underwater drones, man. They got stuff that's 50% off. Just put in B-Day 13. It's their 13-year anniversary. You'll get 13% off tonight. They kept it on just a little bit longer to be able to get this deal to y'all. So, they wanted to make sure everybody in this audience had it. So after tonight, the deal's off. And like I said, this stuff is already seriously discounted. So go check it out. All right. Let's see if we got some other questions in here. No. So I'm going to go hot and heavy on it. So why permaculture is more than gardening? Folks, I can't even begin to talk about why this is so important. I remember, in fact, I was on the phone earlier with a friend of mine just briefly. And I remember it was his wife that I first heard say, now I've since heard it since, that we were designing a property that they had. And she says, let's put the permaculture over there. Okay, just in that statement tells me that you don't really understand how permaculture works. It's a design system. It's about creating, a resilient, interconnected system rather than individual plants or anything like that. Give you a case in point. We may talk about a peach tree out there, but really, if you look at it within the whole permaculture design, that peach tree, first of all, we've talked about zoning so many times on this show. I quit talking about it because we've done so many shows about it. Why? Because zoning is one of those things that seems to be universal in terms of the mistakes that people make. They just put this over here, put this over there, but they don't think about the interactions that all these things need to have. So going back to the peach tree, what's around that peach tree is a guild. And it's a collection of other plants that not only support that peach tree, but in a perfect world, that peach tree is supporting those plants. So in my particular food forest or orchard, let's call it a peach guild. So we got a peach tree in the center. Now, we got 7 layers of a forest. This peach is mature enough that I'm using something vining, let's say, a climbing yam. I can put that in there at the base of this tree. Use a tree as a substrate for it to grow. Okay, so I got my vine layer. Okay, around that peach, I got daffodils. It's going to help keep away some of the pests that are underground and above ground. And interplanted between there is going to be garlic. Okay, I use it every day. Why wouldn't I do that? Plus, it's really medicinal for all the other things that are going out there. Okay, let's talk about our herbs. We got rosemary, thyme, and oregano around every single tree. Not only for our pollinators, but also for us. I harvest it every single day. And it goes into the bone broth and my salad every single day. There's not a day I don't do it. Well, I might forget every once in a while because if I have other obligations that day. Also, you know, maybe 6, 7, maybe 8 feet away from that tree in opposite corners are going to be blueberries. Why wouldn't I? It's part of the layers. And then on the catty corner, if I got space to do it, catty corner from that is going to be a nitrogen fixing shrub that also produces food. Maybe Siberian pea shrub. It could be something that your animals eat. It doesn't even matter. But all these things are not done in isolation. And then think about it. It is zoned along zone 2, which is along my driveway, which is a pretty long driveway, but I can interact as often as I need to. I can harvest from it right there from taking 2 steps away from my truck. I can go out there and harvest. I can maintenance. I can do whatever. If I need to prune, I can put it right there in the truck. It's all designed in such a way in which it all makes sense in terms of how I'm doing it. So as far as that bigger permaculture design, it's all part of a bigger cog on the wheel. So it's a design system. It's about, like I said, it's about creating interconnectedness and efficiency. That's why I have the shirt. Eric made it for me where it says something along the line of, you know, addicted to simplicity or elegance. That's what it says, addicted to elegance. I felt the need to create that shirt because so many people are addicted to unnecessary complexity. And I see it in so many designs. Because you think it's going to be avant-garde or you want to do something weird or you think it might make you famous, they're out here doing ridiculous designs, and I hate to say it that way, that are poorly thought out in terms of management and in terms of how it fits into a larger thing. That's exactly why you need to hire. If you don't know what you're doing or you need to think about these things in a more dispassionate way, hire, you know, a designer like William or Eric to come out there and look at your stuff. Because you may be too close to it. And then on that point, it also starts with observation. Bill Mullison, you know, the creator of permaculture, Eric talked about him in his spot a moment ago, you know, and Jeff Lawton, they also talk about the importance of observing. Before you put shovel to anything, you need to spend time observing, where does the water fall? Where do I have frost pockets? Where do I see the sunlight? You got to understand the land, the lay of the land. You got to understand where the water goes. You got to understand where the wildlife corridors are. You got to understand all that stuff before you go designing anything out on that property. And you got to, if you don't do that, folks, that's where you have some major, major problems where you wind up putting a swale where there never should have been one. Swales, for the most part, don't make sense where I live in Western North Carolina, which is a temperate rainforest. They don't make sense. Certainly not in the terrain I'm in. Now, there are places where it does make sense, and I might go ahead and put a swale or two in there, just more as a demonstration purpose than anything else. But by and large, you got to take the right dog to the hunt, and it all begins with observation. Here's another one that I am big on, and let me take a drink here. All right. So this is a big one, y'all. Enormous. And I don't think people think about it enough. Everything needs to have multiple functions. I mean, multiple functions. So, okay, take for example, a tree. It's going to provide shade, obviously. It's going to provide a habitat, not only for birds, but everything else. It's going to provide mulch when the time is right, and erosion control all at the same time. In addition to all that, depending on the tree, if it's a nitrogen fixture, when I prune it, who do you think is going to get all that stuff? The sheep that are right alongside there, they will absolutely positively strip it. And if it's situated in a certain way, it makes it 10 times easier. Where honestly, anything I prune that gets thrown over to the sheep, they will sit there and take all the leaves off of it, you know, which is a benefit to them. But they're also getting shade out of the deal as well. And it could be for your chickens or whatever else. So everything needs to have multiple purposes. I don't care what that thing is. It needs to have multiple. That's why I used to love Alton Brown's show, Good Eats, so much. I love that show. William loved it. I mean, you know, when he was little, because not just all the gadgets and stuff is where he was using a colander for 10 different things. And so you need to think about it that same way when it comes to your permaculture systems out there. Here's another big one here. And we're kind of known for it is that everything, you know, when I say everything, I'm talking about your waste. It should be viewed as a resource. It shouldn't be waste. Even in the best permaculture system, even the stuff coming out of your body, folks, I try not to waste my urine. I collect it all. The stuff that comes out the other end, could it be made into something? Absolutely. It could be humanure. That requires a redesign of the house that I bought that was already here. So not going to do that. But why are we flushing really, really good water that, let's say it was used in the sink, let's say it was used in the tub, let's say it was used in your kitchen? Why is all that water going into the same place that the toilet water goes? Couldn't that water be reused several times? I dare say it could, just like an earthship design, where that water is used four times from the time it's collected before it goes out. I mean, why not do that? We are absolutely wasteful on so many different ways. I'm talking leaves. Everybody's putting them out on the curb. That's a waste system to them. But for me, that's compost. Food scraps. People are throwing it in the trash. Why? I mean, rainwater that's coming off the side of the house. I know a guy just got time in prison. I want to say it was in one of the western, northwestern states for collecting rainwater. In most places, a lot of places, you can still do that. And in fact, you can still do it if you're a little sneaky about it, like I would tend to be. But anyway, use all of those things. The chicken tractor on steroids, what do you think that is? That is absolutely using a waste stream that would ordinarily end up in a landfill. These are organic, good wastes that I'm repurposing to fatten up pigs and chickens. So much so that all of the layers and all of the meat birds we've raised is 100% free. And our pigs turned out to be 21 cents a pound by using these methods. So yeah, you don't have to pay a fortune out here. You just got to use some of the dogs we've taken to the hunt before. And just remember, nature is a teacher. So you want to go out there to forests, wetlands, natural ecosystems that are out there. We call them zone 5 in permaculture. No matter where you are, you want to leave a little bit of it wild, or you want to find your way and escape into the wild, not only to escape a lot of the EMF out there, but also to go into nature and say, look, I want to see how you're doing it, and then I want to copy it on my own place. That's a really good way to go about it. So just remember also, people, you and me and everybody else is also part of that ecosystem, despite a lot of these weirdos out here saying that we ought to, you know, drop our population because we are overpopulated. Folks, I think somebody did the math on it a little while. I think the entire population of the world could fit into Jacksonville, Florida. I mean, yeah, that's, you know, 8 billion, depending on whether or not you believe their numbers. No, it's not any of that. It's just we kind of write ourselves out of the system. We shouldn't be doing that. We're part of it. I mean, permaculture includes, you know, designing your homes, how those homes interact with your landscape around there, the communities, the daily routes that you have out there. We are part of all of this. So you got to write yourself into it. Let's say your driveway, you know, from your driveway to your house. Maybe you want to put an herb garden in there because you use it every day. And then as you're getting off of work, you're going inside, okay, maybe you want to pick some rosemary. Maybe you got some thyme, some oregano, some sage, whatever's out there, but it's on your way. So it forces you to interact with it. Why? Because you're part of it. You're part of that altogether. And it also emphasizes, you know, resilience in a way that I can't even begin to imagine, y'all. You don't need to be perfect. You just need to be resilient. That's what permaculture is especially good at. We plan for mega disasters. We plan for all these things that are baked into the landscape as we work through it. So at the end of the day, folks, this is why I wanted to get back to a little bit of, you know, here as of late, we haven't really talked a whole lot about permaculture specifically, but I wanted to get back to talking about that because people think that it's just an isolated thing, that it's in your garden. No, it's in your house. Folks, permaculture is in my business design, okay? If I was talking to Jack Spierko, he'd probably echo the fact that I treat the way we make money in our family as I would a permaculture system. Just like I've taught you before, that you don't just want one cultivar of, let's say, an apple or a peach or pear or whatever else. Because let's say you have a disaster come up, well, you're screwed. You don't get peaches that year. You don't get pears. You don't get apples. You don't get anything that year. But if I pick a mid, early, and late of everything, I always got a harvest no matter what goes down. Well, do you think it might be wise to run your businesses that way? Because that's exactly the way we do it here. We have multiple streams of income. None of them are, you know, we're not the Rockefellers by any means, but we live such a low consumption lifestyle that we can live on any one of those incomes. You see what I'm saying? That's the kind of resilience that permaculture makes in our business decisions, in how you organize your house, how you do everything. So yeah, even in the way you conduct business, So let's say I have a low consumption, and I hate to say low consumption lifestyle because it makes people think that, you know, it's not a rich lifestyle. I don't agree with that at all. I have a richer lifestyle than most billionaires out there. And I think a lot of you do too as well. I know one billionaire and I know several millionaires. And in every single case, in every metric I'm aware of, I live a much richer life than any of them. In fact, I would say all of them combined, except for the billionaire, you know, he's got his stuff together. I'd say the millionaires are the ones who are, you know, out of whack, that are definitely got their stuff out of whack, multimillionaires and stuff like that. But the point being is that in our business construct, it's set up just like a permaculture system. You don't overspend, you don't overharvest, you don't take all the money, you got maybe six sources of income, but you don't spend all of it. I mean, all the money that we put out there to rescue kids caught up in child sex trafficking, where do you think that money comes from? I mean, a lot of the other things that we do that we don't talk about because Jesus said, you know, that's your reward. I'm just using that as an example. So if I got all my basic needs met, which I do, and the Lord has provided and he continues to provide for me abundantly in a way that I can't even begin to describe. The most important things in my life, I used to think differently when I was much younger. And then after chasing that rat race, like so many other people out there, I realized, you know what? Ain't none of this stuff making me happy. I'm making a pile of money. So as Michelle, we're doing great. Got all, you know, all the trappings that everybody says you should have, and then got rid of all of it because it is all vanity. It really is. So that's why I say I live a richer lifestyle. I walk around naked half the day because I can here in my isolation. I can go out here, pick fruit, pick vegetables, grow things that I couldn't even hope to buy. I grow animals that you can't hope to buy in a store. You can't even find it at most farmers markets, not even here in Asheville. And I got a family that the fact that I'm able to work with my wife all day long, y'all, do you know how rich that is? I really want you to think about this. Most of us go away to a job that we may not love. Maybe you like it. But most of us go to a job and they pay you enough to keep you from quitting and you do enough to keep from getting fired in most cases. Been there, done that, just like so many out there. But you go away to this job and you give total strangers the best you have to offer from the time you woke up and then the time it took you to get to work, you do your job, you come home and you're wiped out. Even if it was an office job, you're probably even more wiped out. And then guess who gets what's left over? The people you love most. So do you think it's a benefit and a blessing to me to be able to work with my wife every day? Well, she might have different thoughts about that sometimes. But by and large, to be able to wake up with my wife, to work with her, you know, 9 times out of 10, we work together doing the chores in the morning and then we kind of split up and then divide and conquer on the things every day. But I'm giving her the best I got. I'm not going away to a work, I'm corporate sharecropping or whatever the case may be, and then I come home and give my family what's left. I'm not doing that. Yeah, I think that's far richer than all the people that I know that are out there chasing that brass ring. And I don't care if we were in a one-room shack. And it asked me how I know, because we did that. That's how we started. There was 3 adults and 3 dogs living in 300 square feet for a long, long time. Long time. And I was perfectly content. Perfectly happy. And, still happy with what I have right now. Like they say, if you're not happy, but it's all designed around that permaculture principle, which to a certain extent goes right back. Like Paul said, be content in all things. And that's what I've learned to do, or at least I'm learning to do. It's still a work in progress. But coming full circle with this whole thing, y'all, it is absolutely positively of profound value to model everything you have. If you're looking for a model to create, talked about it like the other day with Spearco. Just take a hobby. I've talked about so many things out there, million-dollar ideas that somebody could run with. If you had a little bit, let's say you don't have that knowledge, go out there and get it. I never digged up a freaking ship before, but neither did the Hawley family. They didn't do that before. They went out there, just got together with the family and dug this thing up. There's a whole lot of things that I never did. Nobody's ever done until you get out there and do it. And, you know, if it means if you're just sick and tired of this 9-to-5, you know, pray to the good Lord. But at the same time, I would also look at some permaculture solutions because they're out there. It's why you can be, it's, you can't give from an empty well, but if I have these multiple streams of income and I need this little bit to be able to put the bread on my table to handle what, that means I got so much else that I can give, whether it's in the products we give away or whether it's in, whether it's in the time we're able to devote to somebody that might need the help. I mean, you know, capital comes in many forms. But honestly, this is why I wanted to talk about permaculture today, because it's more, everybody seems to think that it's in gardening. It is not. It's in every part of your life, especially if you use it in the best ways. All right, let's see if we got any more questions over here, because I don't believe we do. And I want to thank everybody for the kind words, Linda, Donna, and all the others out there. I'm just being the quintessential me. I'm really trying to be more and more of that every day. And like I said, through that book of James, I'm trying to also speak less curses in the world, if you know what I'm talking about. You know, you got so much in, like we were talking last night, life and death in the tongue. And I'm trying to not dance around the problems, but at the same time, talk about the solutions and the things, the struggles, the problems that I'm having along the way, because it might be a blessing to you to know that you're not the only one out there. There's so many of us. That's what's so beautiful about going to a lot of these festivals, like I was talking about, Kentucky Sustainable Living. It's gonna, if you've never been to these things, folks, you're gonna it's gonna blow your mind how many people you relate with that you've never met before. You're probably gonna find out that you're within an hour of somebody you didn't even know was right next to you when you feel isolated. Same thing when you go to the Mountain Readiness Festival next week. You'll go all the way over there and you'll probably find somebody that's probably an hour away from you here. It's crazy. It happens every single time I go somewhere and I travel. But look, y'all, I know we live in crazy times, but we got to stay rooted. Most importantly, I mean, if ever there was a time you were to get closer to the Lord, I mean, it is now. I can't even begin to tell you, folks, things are on such shaky ground right now, but you don't have to be fearful, especially when you know Jesus did it all right there at the cross. So I want to thank everybody for checking us out. I want to thank you for all your support, all the love, everything you give to us out there, y'all. Until next time, stay alert, stay alive.
From the smallest sprout to harmony begin in the cycle of life, where the magic's alive. Tune it to the